Radio Prague News.
The Executive Council of the Civic Democratic Party is meeting to discuss the fate of Chairman Mirek Topolánek and the party's support for the interim government. A court in Prague has found that the Ministry of the Interior acted illegally in taking DNA samples from thousands of prisoners in 2007. And a playoff game of the top Czech hockey league has been postponed after a fan died of a heart attack. The Executive Council of the Civic Democratic Party is meeting to discuss both the future of embattled Chairman Mirek Topolánek as a party candidate and the party's continued support for the interim government of Prime Minister Jan Fischer. Regarding the first point, Mr. Topolánek said in an interview for the daily Hospodářské noviny on Thursday that he would resign if the council held a vote to remove him from the ballot. Mr. Topolánek has been under heavy criticism since the weekend for awkward comments he made regarding gays and Jews. The situation has provoked a row between the party chairman and the prime minister, whose Jewish faith Mr. Topolánek noted when referring to him as a submissive leader. Mr. Fischer has since said he would keep his communication with Mr. Topolánek to a working minimum, and his son has left the Civic Democratic Party, accusing its chairman of anti-Semitism and homophobia. Mr. Topolánek, in turn, has reiterated that he sees Mr. Fischer as a weak leader. A court in Prague has found that the Ministry of the Interior acted illegally when it took DNA samples from thousands of prisoners in 2007. The case in question was brought by a convicted murderer who was also filing for 300 crowns in non-material damages. The Circuit Court of Prague 7 denied the plaintiff compensation, noting that he had once given a DNA sample to the police voluntarily, but cited clear misconduct on the part of the Interior Ministry and the police in requiring and storing the samples. 16,000 DNA samples were taken from prisoners convicted of willful criminal acts in order to build a national DNA database to be used by crime investigators. The Ministry of the Interior maintains that the practice is in accordance with the law and will appeal the decision. Russia and the United States have not yet agreed on a new nuclear arms treaty that is likely to be signed in Prague, White House spokesman Robert Gibbs said on Wednesday. U.S. President Barack Obama and his Russian counterpart Dmitry Medvedev will speak in the coming days, and when the details are worked out, the treaty will be signed in the Czech capital, the spokesman added. The U.S. and Russian presidents are expected to sign a new START treaty in Prague next month, the office of the Czech president said on Wednesday after confirmation from the Russian ambassador in Prague. The Russian embassy said the meeting could take place on April 8th. On April 5th of last year, Mr. Obama outlined his vision of a world free of nuclear weapons in a keynote speech at Prague Castle. In sports news, a playoff game of the top Czech hockey league was postponed on Wednesday after a fan in the audience died of a heart attack. The 59-year-old man collapsed in the fifth minute of the quarterfinal best-of-seven game between Vítkovice and Sparta Prague. He died in the stadium despite resuscitation attempts by a doctor in the audience and by paramedics who arrived at the stadium. The man, who suffered from heart illness, was declared dead after more than 30 minutes. At the same time, Sparta Prague player Jakub Koreš was injured after hitting the sideboard and was taken to hospital with spinal injuries. The referees interrupted the play. Both teams later agreed to finish the game on Thursday and postpone the remaining games of the series by one day. Turning briefly now to the weather, the current sunny conditions will continue until the end of the week, with clear skies and highest day temperatures reaching up to 19 degrees Celsius. I'm Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, broadcasting from the Czech capital, with me, Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, the US and Russian presidents are due to sign a major nuclear arms reduction treaty in Prague. A historic Czech stately home gets a new owner following a quick sale. A new sculpting project is to open up one of the few original streets of Prague's former Jewish ghetto to the public. And later, in the first half of a two-part interview, we meet John Mucha, grandson of the Art Nouveau pioneer Alphonse Mucha.
He's the only Czech visual artist who is a founder of global art movement.
That and more coming up, so please stay with us. In 2 weeks' time, news crews from around the world are set to descend on the Czech capital for the signing of an important deal between the United States and Russia on reducing their nuclear arsenals. The summit comes a year after American President Barack Obama outlined his policy on arms control in a major speech at Prague Castle. Ian Willoughby reports.
On April 5, 2009, the then freshly inaugurated Barack Obama made a keynote speech on arms control in front of a large crowd at Prague Castle. The U.S. president described the existence of thousands of nuclear weapons as the most dangerous legacy of the Cold War, and described what he called the trajectory we need to be on.
To put an end to Cold War thinking, we will reduce the role of nuclear weapons in our national security strategy and urge others to do the same. Make no mistake, as long as these weapons exist, the United States will maintain a safe, secure, and effective arsenal to deter any adversary and guarantee that defense to our allies, including the Czech Republic. But we will begin the work of reducing our arsenal.
Now, almost a year to the day since that address, President Obama is due to return to the Czech capital on April 8th. To sign a major agreement on weapons reduction with his Russian counterpart Dmitry Medvedev. The move precedes a nuclear security conference Mr. Obama is hosting in Washington on April the 12th. Washington and Moscow are close to completing a fresh version of the 1991 Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, known as START. It expired at the end of last year, but remains in force pending a new agreement. The new treaty would see the biggest ever single cut in the two countries' nuclear arsenals. There had been speculation for several months over where the signing would take place, with Kiev and Bratislava mentioned alongside Prague as a possible venue. In the end, the Czech capital appealed to the Americans as a chance to return to the scene of last April's speech. What's more, the Czechs are fellow NATO members. As for Moscow, Prague was for decades in its sphere of influence, and the Russians enjoy warm relations with the Czech president, Václav Klaus. Details of exactly where the signing should take place on April 8th have not yet been made clear, though there has been speculation that Prague Castle will host the summit.
Ian Willoughby reporting. But now, a stately home on the edge of Prague has been snapped up for just under a quarter of a billion crowns. The new owner of the well-preserved Baroque Collodier landmark will be getting not just a luxury property and grounds, but also an interesting slice of Czech history. Chris Johnstone reports on the individual property and top-of-the-range real estate market.
The Baroque Collodier Chateau is perhaps one of the best-known stately homes in the Czech Republic. From the mid-1950s, it was used by the Czechoslovak and then Czech governments for regular as well as ceremonial meetings, becoming a backdrop for the arrival of VIP motorcades and official handshakes. But the government reluctantly gave up the chateau at the start of 2009, after losing a restitution battle with its former owners. The winner of that long battle, Vítězslav Kumpera, has now sold it on for a reported price of 233 million crowns, around $12 million, to a Czech-registered company about which little is known. His grandfather, Antonín Kumpera, bought the property in 1937 when he was director of the Walter Motor Company. But the family was evicted after the Second World War on the basis of the so-called Beneš decrees, after being accused of sympathising with the Nazi occupiers. A Czech court ruled in 2008 that the confiscation was illegal. The chateau was used by the Communist secret police for training and for interrogating prisoners, including communist victims of purges in the early 1950s. Those unhappy visitors included Otto Schling and Gustav Husak, who later replaced Alexander Dubček as Communist Party leader before becoming Czechoslovak president. It was also briefly used by the first Czechoslovak president, T.G. Masaryk, as his Prague residence in 1919, before he chose to relocate to Lani, a choice confirmed by his successors. If Koloday is now in Czech hands, it will be part of a growing trend, according to Jaroslav Žižka, sales director with top-of-the-market real estate company Svoboda and Williams. It currently has a series of chateaus on its books seeking buyers. Mr. Žižka says there has been a turnaround since 2004, when most of the buyers of Czech stately homes and castles were foreigners.
When we became an EU member, the proportion was 80 to 20%, 80% foreigner clients, 20% Czech clients. It changed up to 50 to 50%, let's say around 2007. But today, I have to say, it's the right opposite. So it's 80% Czech or local people, 20% foreigners. And out of those foreigners, I have to say that most of the foreigners are people that are either expats or people that are in some way connected with the Czech Republic.
Whatever the trend among buyers, the overall market for such pricey properties has stagnated as a result of the economic crisis. But for those that lost out on the Koloday purchase, the good news is that there are still hundreds of other Czech stately homes and castles seeking a new owner.
Chris Johnstone with that report. Next, a new sculpting project is to open up one of the few original streets of Prague's former Jewish ghetto to the public. Sculptor Aleš Veselý's Three Gates will be located in what used to be the heart of the neighborhood, near the Pinkas Synagogue. The project is slated to be finished in 2011. Sara Borówka has the story.
For the first time in over a century, a small street in Prague's Josefov neighborhood will be open to the public. Come next year, visitors and Prague residents alike can access Malá Pinkasová Street, located in what used to be the Jewish ghetto. The street will be the site of a sculpture project titled Tři brány, or Three Gates. The author of the project is Aleš Veselý, a world-renowned artist of Czech-Jewish origin. 7 years ago, Mr. Veselý discussed possible ways of reviving the area around the Pinka Synagogue with the director of the Jewish Museum, Leo Pavlat. Now, thanks to an 8 million crown contribution to the Three Gates budget by the city of Prague, the artist can start working on the sculptures. Aleš Veselý explains the symbolism of his design.
The main idea of project is something about diaspora, something about in Hebrew is the galut. It's something about leaving the Jewish people here, and about the feelings, about everything which belongs this long period, and also which belongs the place, because the place is the last rest, I mean authentic rest of the Jewish ghetto, which was destroyed in end of 19th and beginning of 20th century.
The Three Gates will stand near the Pinka Synagogue, which commemorates the Czech and Moravian Jews who died during World War II. One of the gates will be made from three planes of polished steel. Visitors will pass through the first two.
But in front of you, there are the third one. Inside, you should decide it, to go left or right. It's something about the symbolize, something the living, to have some roots, some different roots, and to living long time between other cultures, which is necessary to fight every day, and every day to decide it. Decided so many things more as a normal people.
Another gate will look like a construction of three massive wooden branches. For reasons of preservation, Mr. Veselý chose to have the material cast in bronze rather than using real wood. The third gate is composed of a metal frame with a large boulder resting atop. Mr. Veselý has received numerous awards for his work. He designed the Jewish memorial in Terezín. His sculptures can be found around the world in Germany, Korea, Lithuania, and Japan. The total cost of the Three Gates project amounts to 16 million Czech crowns. Friends and supporters of the famous artist are currently organizing a collection to raise the funds Mr. Vesely is still missing for the project.
Thank you, Sara Borovka. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, Moravian small planes manufacturer Evector, based near Zlín, has reason to celebrate. On Wednesday, the firm, which specializes in two-seat aircraft, rolled out its first larger passenger plane in 40 years. The sleek EV-55 Outback is designed for extreme conditions, hence the name, and is expected to go into commercial production in roughly 3 years' time. Jan Wellinger has the details.
With pride, members of Evector's management and construction team unveiled the prototype EV-55 Outback on Wednesday, rolling the shiny aircraft out of a local hangar and onto the tarmac. The plane, which seats 10, including the pilot, is the result of more than 5 years of planning and development. A little earlier on a line to Moravia, I spoke to the firm's Petr Grebeníček, in charge of marketing.
Of course, this day was important for us. We build ultralights or small sport planes for individual customers, but the new EV-55 is our first small passenger plane. It will be good for firms needing to transfer personnel or cargo. The plane makes use of modern technology and materials. 15% is made from composites. Another advantage is that it is also designed to land with a full payload on unreinforced runways, grassed airstrips, or strips at high altitudes. That's also the reason we call the model the Outback.
According to Mr. Grebeníček, such attributes will make the E-55 ideal for Asian, African, South American and Australian markets, providing the firm with a competitive edge. Evector is aiming to roll out the first production models out of the factory in 2013. Before that, plenty of stages still remain, among them the plane's maiden flight sometime in the autumn, and additional tests. Marketing director Petr Grebeníček says, until now the prototype was only tested in computer simulations.
The first test will take place in the third quarter, but from all the computer tests we expect the plane to handle extremely well. We don't expect any problems. Two more prototypes are nearing completion, and one will be used for structural testing. The wing, for example, is complete and has already been sent to the Aeronautical Research and Test Institute in Prague. The third will be tested for individual parts. The plane should then be commercially available in 2013.
The EV-55 Outback will be able to fly at 3,000 meters above the ground and travel more than 2,500 kilometers over one journey. Once it goes into official production, the manufacturer hopes that interest among buyers will be high.
Jan Wellinger with that story. Now, in the final part of our program today, Ian Willoughby meets a descendant of one of the greatest Czech artists of all time, the Art Nouveau pioneer Alfons Mucha. This is the first half of a two-part interview.
John Mucha is the grandson of the great Czech Art Nouveau painter and decorative artist Alfons Mucha. His parents are also noteworthy. His late father Jiří was a journalist and writer, while his Scottish mother Geraldine, who's 92, still composes music. John himself heads the Mucha Foundation, which conserves the family's collection and promotes the artist's work internationally. His home in the Czech capital, situated opposite the gates of Prague Castle, contains a breathtaking array of Alfons Mucha memorabilia and artworks, and is described by John Mucha as a living museum. When we spoke at the Mucha family flat, I first asked him if he had grown up there.
Eventually, yes. The story is that I was born in London. I was born in May 1948. And when my mother was heavily pregnant in January 48, one of my Scottish relatives was very high up in the BBC. And he came to Prague and he said to my parents, "We don't know what's going to happen, but something will happen." And of course came February. And he advised my mother to have a baby in England. And the reason was that if you're born in England, or at least in those days, you automatically got a British passport. So Mum left, and I was born in London, where I spent the first 6 months, I think. And then we came to Prague, and we lived in the family villa in Bubenec till 1950, when, which was already after a communist coup, when we were thrown out. And then my father found this place, which doesn't belong to us, it belongs to a church. And yes, as a family, we've been living here since 1950.
Did you have a great sense of privilege growing up here and living opposite Prague Castle?
None at all. I think, you know, when you're a little kid, I mean, you may find it surprising, but all of this was completely normal to me. And it's interesting because, of course, at school, I had a lot of friends, and friends whose families, it was typical, you'd have a flat, what was a flat in the First Republic, which would have, let's say, four rooms, one bathroom, one kitchen, and it would be shared by two or three families. So, you know, kids who actually came from very, I mean, in terms of space, limited means. The only difference was that, but as boys, you know, this was great because there was lots of space. But nobody ever, it was only when I was about 15, when suddenly there was an element, whether it was being encouraged by the communists, I don't know, but that's when things started getting a bit more difficult and, you know, you got beaten up from time to time and, you know, people would shout at you, come on, admit you're a Jew, and things like that, which was rather strange.
Is it the case that this flat is somehow based on Alphonse Mucha's studio in France?
Yes, it is. The family, really, has been very lucky in that we have been able to hang on to everything that you see. And yes, when we moved in 1950, my parents tried to sort of make it, to give it the sort of feel of the atelier that Alphonse had in Val de Grasse. It's interesting, what a lot of people don't know, if it weren't for my mother, we would not be sitting here today. Why do I say that? In 1950 also, my father was arrested, accused of espionage, falsely. The state prosecutor wanted death penalty, which fortunately he didn't get, but he got hard labor. He was in uranium mines in Yakimov. And, of course, the secret police came to confiscate everything. And my mother, very bravely, said, I'm sorry, all this is mine, and I'm a British subject. And somehow, they didn't expect that. So they sort of became uneasy, and then they said, well, we'll go, but we'll come back. And they never did. Having said that, had we had a collection of Picasso, Matisse, and so on, like, for instance, perhaps Kramarova's Birka, I'm not sure we would have got it back.
How old were you when you realized that your grandfather was a great artist?
Under the communist regime, Alphonse Mucha was a decadent bourgeois of no value whatever. As a kid, I mean, I didn't really think about it. I think, well, it's difficult because, of course, I started being a teenager, you know, you start moving into the 60s. I mean, 61, 62, you know, suddenly Beatles, Rolling Stones, eventually flower power, and, of course, massive revival of Art Nouveau, and, of course, who else? Mucha. And Mucha suddenly became famous yet again all over the world. I remember going to the exhibition at the Victoria and Albert Museum, which was the first exhibition again after many, many years abroad. And it was a sensation. And so, yes, it felt nice.
What's your relationship to his work? I mean, how much do you like it?
I think what is incredible is the diversity of his work. I mean, he's still best known for the posters, and we're trying to dynamite the thing that he was just the poster artist. You know, when you see the pastels, which are radically different, when you see the drawings, which are exquisite, the oil paintings, the Slav epic, which is extraordinary, it is absolutely extraordinary, the Bosnian pavilion, which was a spark for the Slav epic. I think what comes out of his work, that almost everything that he did came from the heart, and you can't miss that.
Roughly how many pieces of his do you have here in this flat?
We don't have many of his pieces in the flat. Obviously, there are security considerations, sadly, in this world. But what I can tell you is that the collection is the largest and the most comprehensive in the world. But obviously, for security reasons, we have to keep things in secure storage.
What do you think explains the enduring appeal of Art Nouveau?
I'd slightly change it in that if you look at history, you have this huge explosion in 1894, and where Alphonse is absolutely key. He's the only Czech visual artist who is a founder of art, of global art movement. There are many other wonderful painters, Kubka and so on, but they were not so as a foundation stones of whichever movement it was. But then, of course, it exploded onto the world, and then came Art Deco, and it quickly disappeared. And then Flower Power, again, but it started consolidating its position. And I think the appeal is particularly today, where it's not just economic crisis, but it's also age of doubt. It's age of where, you know, we're sort of wondering what it's all about. And I think Alphonse's art, what it does, it sort of offers you a haven. And so, you know, you can, you know, like a boat, you can sort of sail in and have a little rest and get your thoughts organized. And then you go out again into the world.
On Friday, we will have the second half of that interview with John Mucha. In it, he talks about the responsibility of overseeing his grandfather's legacy, setting up Prague's Mucha Museum, and the future of his great work, the Slav Epic. If you listen to us on shortwave, please remember that as of Sunday, a new broadcast schedule will come into effect. As usual, you can find the list of times and frequencies on our website, www.radio.cz. Or you can send in a request to english@radio.cz or Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. We will mail our current program leaflets to you and we'll be looking forward to receiving your reception reports. And we will also be happy to get your comments on anything you've heard in our programs. But for now, from myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.